Good afternoon, everybody. Hope you're enjoying your lunch. Pleasure to be with you. My name is Tara Joseph. I'm with the FCC Board of Governors and Reuters here in Hong Kong. Before we get started, a couple of quick housekeeping notes. Please flick your cell phone or mobile phone to buzz or silent before we get going. And also just to tell you about some upcoming events, we're full of lunches this week. Tomorrow we have a lunch on the Boxer Rebellion, the Manchurian Plague and the Japanese Invasion, and House Arrest, 45 years of an Irish missionary life in Liaoning. That will be with Mark O'Neill, who will be speaking. And then on Thursday, Mark Mobius of Templeton will be coming to speak about emerging markets and his new book on emerging markets. So please do sign up if you'd like to attend. Now, on to the main event of the day, and Khun Pavin, who's here to join us. He was with us last year, and people enjoyed the lunch so much that we thought we'd bring him back. He's here to talk about toxins homecoming, yes or no. And the one quote I think I heard from him earlier was, he's coming. So I guess we'll find out what the keys are to Thailand and where it's all headed. Khun Pavin is an academic at Kyoto University. He spent 9 years in Singapore previously and studied at SOAS in London. Khun Pavin.
Well, thank you so much for coming. It's just like coming home. In fact, this is my third time here, and I enjoyed so much last time. And it's proof that you know, I'm still survive. I have not been arrested since my last talk. So hopefully I will survive again this time, even though I'm not so sure now. Right, today's topic is about toxin. You know, I'm not a fan of toxin, I must say. But I do not hate him. So he might send his representative, you know. That person might be among us, so please convey this message that I still, you know, look up to him. Well, okay. Now, Thaksin's a homecoming. Yes, no, so what, right? Okay. Well, I mean, it has made a headline in Thailand, welcome home. And this is kind of like a joke, you know, for the Thai reader, that the only way that he could come home and save is for him to immediately enter into a monkhood. So then he might be safe, and then, you know, someone might not want to, might not be able to assassinate him, but I don't think it's true. Everything can happen in Thailand, okay? Whether you monk or not, it's a norm there. Well, at the beginning of this month, Thailand politics once again returned to the streets, okay? Threatening a new round of instability and a contested parliamentary putsch for national reconciliation. On the surface, while the return of the protester opposed to former Prime Minister Thaksin may signal a repeat to the run-up of the 2006 military coup, but the latest mobilization, at least initially, lacked crucial military support. So we have heard a lot before about whether there would be another military coup, but then I personally did not believe that it would be one very soon. Because the impact and the implication would be too devastating for the military. But let's see, the Thaksin enemy, especially in the establishment forces, which include the opposition Democrat Party, the Yellow Shirt People's Alliance for Democracy, or the PAD. If you forget who they are the one who seized international airport, you know, in late 2008 in November for 9 days, and then most of them have not been prosecuted, okay? That goes to show the linkage between the PAD and the those in the judicial system in Thailand. So this group, opposition party, PAD, and also a segment of the Royal Palace, they stand opposed to 4 national reconciliation bills. They believe aim narrowly to give amnesty to and restore the court confiscated assets of the self-exiled Thaksin, who is the real power behind his sister, Prime Minister Yingluck Shinawat, in the Pheu Thai-led government. So Thaksin was sentenced to 2-year imprisonment for conflict of interest and corruption and you know, he ran away. Basically, his enemy came out and said that this is not right for the government to push for the reconciliation bill to go through the parliament, because this would give Thaksin a free pass, you know, for him to come home without being charged. So for them, it was unacceptable. Now, reconciliation bill. Okay, let me talk. It's a little bit technical. I will try to go very quickly, but I think it's important to understand what it's all about the reconciliation bill. Okay, as I said, there are four different types of reconciliation bills, which the Thai media call amnesty bills. Okay, the two main ones are those proposed by General Sonthi Bunyaratnakin, okay, former coup leader of 2006, and currently MP from Matupum Party in the parliament. The guy on the left hand, man in black, he's in the middle. And then it's also him in the middle on the right hand. That was the night of 19 September when he went on television and declared there was a military coup. And I hope that you noticed the two big portraits behind them. So he's the man. General Sonthi. So basically, this guy, he was a former enemy of Thaksin, suddenly become good friend of Thaksin today. As I said, anything can happen in Thai politics. So Sonthi came up with a proposal for reconciliation bill, two of them. And the other two proposed by a late red shirt leader who is also now in the cabinet. His name is Nattawut Saikua, and he's currently deputy minister of agriculture. Nattawut Saikua, I don't know whether you know him, but I think you should follow him closely. A very charismatic young man. Someone said that he could become prime minister in the future. I attend his talk before. As I said, very charismatic. Ben Anderson said that he's one of the most public speaker he ever seen in his life. So I don't have a photo of him, but you know, he's very well known in Thailand. He himself proposed to reconciliation bill. Anyhow, I'll show you the content and what are the differences very quickly. Section 1 of the bill basically has the name of the act, right? Section 2 state that the act will come into force the day after publication in the government gazette. Section 3 of General Sonthi can be summarized something like this. Any acts related to political protests or expression of political opinion between 15th of September 2005, that was only 4 days before the military coup, until 10th of May 2011, that was 2 years ago. 10th May 2011, that when the government and the security forces launched a brutal crackdown on the racial protester, resulting in almost 100 people being killed on the street of Bangkok. So it's a period just shortly before the military coup up until May 2011. It's about 6 years. During those period, right, political protests, expression of political opinion that were deemed illegal before will no longer be illegal. And the person who committed those acts will be freed from a legal responsibility for their acts. Okay, basically anyone who committed, you know, any political activity, illegal activity, would be free. These acts are, first, various acts that arouse out of a political protest or expression of a political opinion, including violation of laws, prohibiting anti-government gatherings, statements, or announcements, resisting the carrying out of acts of government officials, or other form of protest which affect other people physically or their assets, that arouse of political protest or expression of political opinion. And second, various acts by government officials. See, not only ordinary people, but this also cover the act by the government officials, including the military. Okay. So basically, the military who killed the protest can walk free too, according to this reconciliation bill. Various acts by government officials or other involved in preventing or suppressing political protests, expression of political opinion, or other related acts. This is Sonthi's proposal. For Nattawut, the red shirt guy's proposal, slightly different. The difference is that the proposal excludes terrorist acts and acts that causing death. So the red shirt minister still want to, you know, the military to take responsibility for the killing of the red shirt. And that would involve some of the red shirt who also burned down, if you remember in May 2010, who burned down Central World. But that is still very controversial, such a controversial case, because we don't know who exactly commit the arson attack against Central World. Anyhow, okay, under Sonthi version, all protesters and soldiers basically get off. But there are so many things open to interpretation, such as, you know, what does arouse out of the political protest mean? Okay. And on this fact, it treats everything involved with the yellow shirt and red shirt protester as not being illegal. But it is, again, still open to interpretation on how broadly it will be interpreted and how related to protest such act must be. So if this gonna go through the parliament, the yellow shirt who occupied the government house for 9 months and also at the international airport would also not be prosecuted. For the red shirt guy version, those who commit terrorist acts and acts that causing death won't get off. This is the main difference, although the wording throughout does differ slightly, and this may affect how broad the amnesty is for some offenses. And for the reference to the expression of political opinion, there's other questions too. For example, does this include those who have been prosecuted under Section 112, Article 112, which is Lèse Majesté law, whether you consider them to be a political prisoner, whether, you know, those people who have been arrested during the period of the coup and May 2010, should there be also get off the charge? It's again very much open to interpretation. And one Pheu Thai, which is a ruling party, one Pheu Thai MP said that it would include those prosecuted under 112, and presumably for the reason of giving encouragement to the red shirt in jail. Most of them who have been charged for Lèse Majesté, surprisingly, they are member of red shirts. And this creates an image or perception of the red shirt being an anti-monarchy in Thailand. Okay, that's why I think there had been an attempt on the part of some member of the government to include political prisoners who have been charged for 112 to also be set free. This opened a way for the Democrat Party, opposition party, to criticize the government because the party will, it was a plan. It went so far to say that it was a plan to overthrow the monarchy. And the opposition party argued that, you know, if you arrested someone who installed the monarchy and you eventually let these people go, these people will do the same thing once again. And that would lead to the decline of the monarchy. That's what the Democrat Party has been arguing. It will also depend on who interpret this act. And in theory, you know, it could apply to 112 crimes, although in practice it may not, or it may be limited to only some Lèse Majesté cases. I don't want to go into detail because it's just too technical. Section 4, once this act comes into force, for any person who is under investigation for acts committed per Article 3, the previous article, the person who has authority to investigate shall suspend the investigation. In a case, if the case is already in the court, then the prosecutor must withdraw the case. If the person has already been convicted, then the person must be deemed as never having been convicted. So if the person is serving a penalty, then the penalty must end and the person released. So this also involves ongoing trial, including those who has been already convicted. Section 5, any person affected by the acts of an organization appointed under orders of the Council of National Security. The Council of National Security is the governing body of the coup leader in 2006. After the coup tear down the constitution of 1997, when they staged a military coup in 2006, this group of coup makers set up this governing body to rule Thailand for almost 2 years, and it was under the name of Council of National Security. Okay. Okay. Any person affected by the acts of an organization appointed by orders of the Council of National Security or the Council Chairman, which is General Sonthi, right, which seized power on 19 September 2006, will not be considered suspect or wrongdoers, and the statement of Article 4, the previous article, shall apply. All related organization will treat the person affected according to the rule of law. To cut this short, basically this one is for Thaksin, because this is about the coup maker trying to justify military coup that toppled elected government of Thaksin. And in the aftermath, I think there were attempts, many attempts of the Thaksin enemy to try to continue to justify any attack against Thaksin, including giving him a 2-year sentence, imprisonment for conflict of interest, and confiscated his asset in February 2010. I mean, almost 60% of his personal asset disappeared. So this is kind of a compromise for Thaksin. If the amnesty bill will go through, then Thaksin, then everyone will, how to say, we imagine that the coup had never taken place. So Thaksin will just come back as an innocent man. Okay. Two more sections. Section 6, the revocation of the political rights of a former executive of a dissolved political party will end, and those persons will be deemed as those whose right had never been revoked. This applied to the 111 Thai Lak Thai, which is an old party of Thaksin member, right? The member of Thai Lak Thai party, even though the 5-year ban is over. I will explain a little bit later. This section 6 will also wipe the slate clean, as they were not banned, but also to the executive member of the People's Power Party, and other party which has been banned from December in 2009. Okay, anyway, after the coup, then Thaksin Party shortly again was disbanded. Okay, and then they came up with accusation against the party. And when the party was banned, all the executive member of Pheu Thai Party, 111 of them, very influential, very powerful, you name it, you know, a big politician in the past, they were banned from politics for 5 years. In fact, the ban just came to an end only in May this year. So which means these people could return to politics anytime from now. And I'm sure that they will return anytime soon. This section 6 would treat like the ban never taken place. That never happened. These people never been accused of anything, including the ban of another party, People's Power Party, in 2008. How can I say? You will not be able to kill Thaksin. Thai Rak Thai, you know, disbanded. Then the rest of Thai Rak Thai came back and formed a new party, People's Power Party, PPP, won another election. Then they managed to ban PPP in 2008 and ban some more executive members. This section 6 will also cover those people under the PPP, treat like nothing happened before. Okay, when PPP was banned, it was Pheu Thai Party, which is the current party. So no matter how much you want to eliminate Thaksin, he has always been able to come back. Section 6 will just, you know, start off new, pretend that nothing happened. The last section was Section 7, any actions according to this act will not be considered as ending a person's right to take a civil action to seek compensation for any damages caused by people whose responsibility has been lifted. This principally allows people who have been injured or a family of someone killed to sue for compensation. For example, any red shirt who have been injured in the March, May 2010 protest. I think the last one is kind of like a compromise. You know, because I think that the justice will not be given. Justice will not be given to the red shirt, to people who lost their life. It will not happen anyway. I don't think the government have the guts to arrest you know, key member of the army who ordered the killing of the red shirt. I don't think that will ever happen, because I think the government, the current government, is more interested in building a working relationship with the military and also the palace. So I think they are aware of this fact. Because of that, they would rather give money rather than to fight to give back justice. So basically, this is a compromise. Okay, out of this, this is the four bills that Thaksin apparently made an agreement with his enemy that it will have to go through the parliament at the beginning of this month, so that, you know, we will start again, right? And we were led to believe that it will go through, until there was an event later, and many people in Thailand call a judicial coup. Okay, now back to what happened in the Thai parliament when they tried to propose the four reconciliation bill. What happened was that, you know, at the beginning of this month, the Yingluck government attempted to rush the bill's passage, but it was upended when the Democrat Party violently disrupted parliament, and the PAD, the yellow shirt, and ally multicolor street protesters surrounded parliament to block the Pheu Thai politician from entering the building. I could not believe that this would happen to Thai parliament. This was the first time in our history. I thought that this somehow, like Taiwan or anywhere else, South Korea, when they start to throw, you know, shoes and, you know, this and that. But it actually happened, you know. I think they were so desperate, the Democrat Party. And, you know, the lady on the top left, you know, she kind of pushed the House Speaker from the Pheu Thai Party. And then she basically dragged the chair away. And then the Pheu Thai Party came to rescue the chair, and kind of like a tug of war like that. And everything was aired on television. Then they tried to push him off the chair. Then, you know, one MP from Democrat Party threw the whole pile of paper at the House of Government. One was strangled at the neck, as you see. It's so funny, and it's so entertaining for us. Okay. Right. This is what happened in the parliament, right, as I explained to you. Something very unexpected. Then, at the height of the commotion, of all this, you know, chaotic situation, the speaker of the low house has to call bring the session to a close, because he could not continue, and then it has to stop the approval of the bills. Then the Constitutional Court intervened, right? So the Constitutional Court stepped in and it ordered the parliament to suspend the bills. The third reading, there are three readings. The third reading was the final one, until it could review a petition challenging the legality of a related charter change bills. So the Democrat Party protests against the bill, claiming that the bill is illegal and would like the Constitutional Court to intervene. Now, this is what I would like to emphasize. Thailand's court, Constitutional Court in particular, have played a prominent political role since the 2006 military coup. Remember, in 2008, the court forced a Prime Minister Samak Sunthorawet, also a Thaksin proxy, to step down on a very absurd ground that he was working as a celebrity chef while serving in office. Basically, while he was working as a prime minister, he also has a cooking show on TV. And the court argued that that was a conflict of interest, because when he involved into a television, then there would be some sort of money, you know, to reward him. But Samak said that he did this for free. He did not charge anything. Anyhow, they managed to find out that Samak himself, he went out to do some shopping, buy grocery to be used in the program. And each time the grocery would cost him something like 20 or 30 US dollars. And he might have some few pence and cents left in his pocket. They call that was a case of corruption. So because of that, because of this conflict of interest, you cannot find anywhere in the world. So he was forced to step down by the Constitutional Court. But then the PPP party nominate someone else to replace him, and they found a right person to do so. Somchai Wongsawat, who was Thaksin's brother-in-law. So the elite believed that they managed to use the court to force Samak to step down, but then they could not win Thaksin again because Thaksin keep coming back, appointing his own people into the top position. But the court had not given up. Eventually, the court found some irregularity during the election, and once again, Somchai Wongsawat was forced to step down for the second time. So again, this is the order from the Constitutional Court, which many people see, this is a part of political intervention of the court. So consequently, the party has to be dissolved, and many people perceive this as another kind of coup, and they call it a judicial coup. You don't need military coup, you don't need tanks rolling on the street, but we can do a coup through the Constitutional Court. And the latest controversial order by the court once again was viewed by Thaksin and the Pheu Thai as an attempt to seize power once again. And they claimed that the court violated separation of power provisions in the Constitution and are now threatening to impeach the court 9 judges. So there was like a tug of war right now. Many government members insist that it is the Attorney General, not the Constitutional Court, who has the authority to admit petition submitted by the Democrat Party. And the decision of the court stir a sense of resentment among some Thais. They are now collecting signatures to remove the entire member of the court from their position. Now, it's all set the stage for potential showdown. That week, I was so scared that, many people would go on the street once again, for protest. And this could lead to a clashes between the pro and the anti Thaksin protest group, but it did not happen. Just over a month ago, an event that marked the second anniversary of the May 2010 brutal crackdown on the street of Bangkok, Thaksin hinted, he phoned in into a red shirt, a gathering. He phoned in and he said that he would be coming home soon, okay? And he would be coming home on his own terms. He also said that this would be the last long-distance call to his fans. His statement led many people to believe that a deal must have been struck between Thaksin and his enemy. And they all seem to be, to give consent to the reconciliation bill. But somehow the deal went wrong. This happened before the passage in the parliament. So Thaksin was quite sure at that point that he already made a deal with the elite, and that when he proposed this bill in the parliament, there would be no problem. But as it turned out, it failed. So something must have gone wrong. What had gone wrong? Okay, this was the latest of the latest of Thaksin appearing. I still have 10 minutes.
I'd like to leave some time for Q&A, so okay. I don't mean to cut you off, but we are running short on
Give
time.
Give me a few more minutes. Okay. Right. I will try to sum up then. After what happened in Parliament, Thaksin was suddenly very upset. He thought that the deal was okay earlier. So he made another phone in, and this time the tone was different. Previously the tone was a little bit very compromising, but he said that no, that's it. I'm gonna take a revenge if I will ever come back to Thailand. The opposition party and also his enemy did not play according to the parliamentary rule. So that was when he said the last time. The key actor here, though, give me one more minute. We need to look into it. I think, what about the role of the military in the current crisis in Thailand? You would think that the military is a prime enemy of Thaksin, but it has been rather quiet with regard to the proposal, the reconciliation bill. It's because, as I said, if the bill ever gone through, then the military would be free from all the prosecution on the allegation. Whereas the Democrat Party would be the loser in the game. In fact, I don't see the future of Democrat Party. It's getting less and less popular, and it cannot It cannot appeal to the public, and it has no good policy. Now it becomes so petty, you know, attacking government on a silly, smaller thing. That's what's quite sad. I mean, the last one was the Sonthi Lim Thong Kung, who is the leader of the PAD, the Yellow Shirt. Again, I think the Yellow Shirt, I find it hard for them to come back on the street, as they did so powerfully in 2008. I think they have lost so much of the member. Lastly, this is my last slide, the monarchy. I mean, how can we talk about Thailand without referring to the monarchy? What would be the role of the monarchy here? I can tell you, we can talk about during the Q&A. There's a mixed signal from the palace of whether how the palace have seen Thaksin this day. I think that the last appearance of the king at Ayutthaya, the old capital of Thailand, only just a few weeks ago, that was the first time in public after he has been hospitalized in 2009. It's kind of like a strong message that the king is well and he would go out and about once again. He met with Ying Lak in public for the first time in many months. Many people said that this is some sort of, you know, a reconciliation between the palace and the government, which could lead to something, another kind of deal. I don't know what kind of deal, but this must have involved the upcoming royal succession too. Well, I'll leave it here, and I'm happy to take any question. Thank you so much.
So we have microphones around. If you'd like to raise your hand, we have about 10 minutes. Give us your name and where you're from for questions. I'm very happy to kick off, but we'll start here.
I work for Finanz und Wirtschaft, Swiss business newspaper. I asked you before shortly when we talked there, the perception of Thailand is obviously we have a continual political crisis for 10 years now. At the same time, the Thai economy seems to do very well. There's even kind of the stock market is up. Foreigners pour money in there continuously. Do you think the outside world is underestimated the risks we have in Thailand? On the other hand, you said it was like a funny game there, you know, kind of the elites kind of fight with each other. Maybe on the street level there's a very nasty fight, but it seems the elites in parliament kind of they have an amusing game going on. So what kind of picture is the right one?
Yeah, please.
Thank you. As we had earlier discussion, I'm not an economist, so I'm not give you in-depth analysis on what this would cause to Thai economy. But I mean, it's funny, as you said, it seems that Thai politics and economy are two separate things. What I can tell you that maybe investor who have been investing in Thailand for so long, they're looking at it at a long term. But I think what they have seen now is kind of an illusion, I would say. And you are right that, you know, on the surface, it seems like Thailand is doing okay. That, you know, if Thaksin ever come home, that can only mean one thing. It means that, as I said, the deal has been done, which means that, you know, they allow Thaksin to come back. In a way, it could be a good thing for Thailand. It means that, you know, eventually Thaksin and his enemy managed to, you know, kiss and make up. You know, this could be good for a long-term peace for Thailand, but I don't think it's going to be that easy. It's very much very complicated. And I think it would be, if you want to look at long-term economic stability in Thailand, you obviously have to look at the political stability. And I think it would be misleading for anyone to talk about Thaksin alone, to talk about whether Thaksin will come back, whether, you know, Thaksin would become prime minister again, this and that. I think the focus should be on, to be honest, on the monarchy and then on the future of the monarchy, because the monarchy has been playing a central role here. And the future of Thailand, future of political stability will depend on the king, how long he would, you know, stay with us. And then about the royal succession, what would be the kind of a transition, what would be the scenario. I have almost 10 scenarios to tell you. I don't know which one it's going to be. But that would be difficult for investor to look ahead. But just my word of advice, you know, I mean, the focus should have been on the monarchy, not on Thaksin. And I think I tell you here that to me, I think Thaksin is fading away. You know, he still make headline, but I don't see him coming back as a prime minister. I think Yingluck has done so well too. You know, if there would be anyone, it would have been Yingluck. You know, people underestimated her before, but suddenly she has shown some kind of leadership and her personal character that somehow, you know, win hearts and minds of the red shirt. I don't know whether I answer your question.
Steve.
Well, actually, I was going to ask you something else, but could I follow up on that question? I mean, it seems hard to imagine that somebody with Thaksin's personality and dynamism and political connections would come back to Thailand with his sister as prime minister and wouldn't be a player. So if he is going to be a player, what happens?
Mm. Well, I mean, this is Thaksin, you know. I never know him personally, but I think I know, I can read him. He's an easy book to read. It's his personal stubbornness. He is now a prime minister of Thailand. You know, what he want more, you know, even though I said that Yingluck, she has that charisma, and also she has shown her leadership, but we know that the real person who pulled the string behind the scene is still Thaksin, you know. If Thaksin would ever be, you know, very happy and follow the king philosophy of sufficiency, then he should be very happy wherever he is right now, because he still control, you know, Thai politics. You know, I was told that every cabinet meeting, Thaksin is on the phone. You know, even, you know, Skype him immediately, and he tell, you know, you're gonna be in that minister, this and that. Then why he want more? I think this is more has to do with his personal thing, and he's very determined. And he said once, you know, to the Thai report, to a Thai media, he said that, you know, you can pull me down. When I am down, make sure you kill me, because if you don't kill me and I can stand up, I'll kill you. So basically, he will never give up. So that's why all this year he said that, oh, I have enough of politics. You know, I don't want to go back to politics. No, it's never been true. That's going to show that, you know, Thaksin will still, to a certain extent, very influential. And it's a shame that if he would give more chances for his sister to do the job properly, then the one of the bad thing also, that because Thaksin is still around and he still show his eagerness to come back, he kind of put everything on hold. He keep the red shirt a member and red shirt movement, he hold them hostage, you know, because with the Thaksin name, the opposition party can always exploit Thaksin for every single thing, to justify every single thing. In Thailand, we call, you know, they have this kind of Thaksinophobia. So they hate Thaksin so much that they keep talking about Thaksin, and whatever they talk about Thaksin, then it justifies their action. I have to go on the street today because Thaksin would be coming back. Okay, that's okay. The constitutional court has to step in, and that is okay, because this is to stop Thaksin from coming back. Everything is about Thaksin. Thaksin is still very much useful for the opposition, and it's sad for the red shirt, because I'm sure that, I mean, in my experience dealing with the red shirt members and movement, not a lot of them are pro Thaksin. You know, they had nothing to do with Thaksin. They are just pro democracy. But because of the close connection between red shirt and Thaksin, that, you know, kind of become a mark for them. You know, people will continue to look at red shirt as to a weapon of Thaksin, which is very unfair.
We have time for one or two more questions. I do have one. We spoke very briefly earlier about the rising competition, for lack of a better word, between China and the United States and Southeast Asia. So enter Thailand, which has its own somewhat difficult politics. Will that have anything to do with how politics and the economy are shaped in Thailand in the coming couple of years?
Yes, definitely. When it comes to foreign affairs, Thailand has engaged so much with the US and China, and it has been a war between US and China to win over Thailand, you know, so that they can gain a stronger foothold in the kingdom. I'll try to give this a short answer. Relation between Thailand and the U.S. has gone a long way. You know, Thailand has been one of the main partner and also ally of the U.S. in Southeast Asia. You know, since the Cold War, we are the first country in the whole Asia we signed an agreement, a military agreement with the U.S. So the link has been there, but somehow I think in the past year, the U.S. has refused to understand the new reality in Thailand. What I try to say is that the U.S. still have this old same perception of the monarchy sitting on the top of Thai politics. If you ally with the monarchy, if you keep the monarchy happy, then your interest would be okay. But it's no longer the case, because as we know that, you know, the monarchy has been challenged by new actors, by Thaksin, by the red shirt. So I think the U.S. still cannot adapt to the new reality, and that caused an impact on its influence in the kingdom. In the meantime, with the rise of China, Chinese has been more pragmatic and then has the right approach, interested in Thai politics but not intervening. And if you would take notice, China, the Chinese government would never say anything about Thai politics, would never criticize the military, you know, never go out there and support the red shirt too openly. In the meantime, we have a Chinese ambassador, Ambassador Guan Mo, who has been in Thailand in and out for 18 years. He speaks Thai better than Thai. And believe it or not, all the big ministers in Thailand has to pay a courtesy call to the Chinese ambassador. I mean, this smaller thing somehow is very important for China. And I think because of that, and because of the rise of China to becoming one of the biggest market in the world, I'm afraid to say, I mean, Thailand is leaning toward China more and more. But I'm not saying that we are walking away from the U.S. But China has offered something that the U.S. has ever offered. You know, we have a Cobra goal with the U.S., the biggest military exercise between Thailand and U.S. China started military exercise with Thailand 2 years ago. And China make it even better. We pay for everything. We have to even pay anything else. We have FTA with Thailand, with China. We still cannot conclude the FTA with the U.S. I mean, there's a lot more to say.
So will that be a factor in Thai politics?
Definitely. I mean, there's a huge Chinese community, business community in Thailand. And, you know, if you look back, I just talked to Steve, if you look back at the past prime minister, 4 or 5, all of them are Chinese. You know, the current one is Chinese, Ying Lak. Obviously Chinese too. Thaksin Chinese, he even went to pay respect to his ancestor in Guangzhou. Banhan Sirpa Acha, Chaurit Yong Jayut, Chuan Lik Pai, oh my God. So I mean, there's a link there. You know, we have a Chinese prime minister in Thailand. So I with that link, with the potential market, I think the benefit, we become, how to say, pull toward China more. And with the U.S., I think the U.S. still played the wrong approach. What I can say is it's still so much on politics, but not so much on economy. And we find hard to break into the U.S. market too. Because of that, I think it will cause an impact on the overall, you know, economic tie.
Thank you, Pavan Chachap Val Pongpun. Thanks very much for coming to speak to us today. And as usual, a small gift from the FCC. Thanks very much for joining us, and enjoy your afternoon, everybody.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.